Blog Talk Radio.
This is Brian Kaplowitz, and you're listening to the Speaker Match Radio Series, Success Strategies for Speakers from the Pros. This is a live show where we interview top experts in the speaking industry and business to provide emerging speakers with marketing strategies and other business building advice. If you're listening live, you can participate in this call online right now by going to speakermatch.com/radio.
Welcome to today's Speaker Match Radio call. I am not Brian Kaplowitz. I'm Burke Allen from Allen Media Strategies, a media marketing company in Washington, D.C. And my old friend Brian is on the final stages of baby watch. Brian's wife, Allison, hasn't had the baby yet, but is in the early stages of labor right now. And Brian called and said, listen, I need some help. I've got something pretty important coming up this week. Can you help out and guest host the radio show? And I was, of course, blessed to do it. Brian and I go back several years. He actually attended our media interview training in Washington, D.C., because as our special guest today can tell you, having the opportunity to do national radio and television interviews is a huge part of increasing your marketability as a speaker. And really, that's what our call is about today. And we've got a guest that will have lots of valuable information for you. And we do encourage you to get your questions in to speakermatch.com/radio. We'd like to welcome Vicki Sullivan. She's a nationally recognized top market strategist for experts on professional speaking and works with folks all across the circuit. And Vicki herself speaks throughout the U.S. and Canada about things like speaker selection trends in high fee markets and also strategies that can position experts to get into those high fee markets. One of the great things that Vicki does is her market intelligence updates. And those intelligence updates are distributed to experts all across America, as well as 17 countries abroad. Vicki has served twice on the editorial board for Professional Speaker Magazine. She has articles about the speaking market that have been published in other magazines like Presentations and the Handbook of Business Strategy. I've also seen some quotes from Vicki in places like Fortune.com, the New York Times, and Investors Business Daily, and those are the kinds of places that we like to place our own clients in, so we always notice when folks get free media like that. Vicki's groundbreaking work earned her an appointment on the Women's Leadership Board for the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and there she focuses on mentoring future world leaders. She is, as Larry King would say, no slouch. So let's welcome Vicki Sullivan to the call today. Hey, Vicki.
Hi. Thanks so much, Burke, for bringing me on. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, it's our pleasure, and boy, I've got questions for you, young lady.
Shoot, I'm ready to go.
Very good. And we also have some questions that have already been emailed in from the folks that are listening in, so we're going to try to get to as much meat as we can on the call today. The economy, of course, is story number one, and the president is in Canada today talking about how that's all going to play into things with our folks overseas as well as north and south of the border. How has the economy affected the meetings industry from your vantage point? And along with that, are there some trends you think that impact speaker selection with the tough economy that we're facing here in the U.S.?
Well, the thing about the economy is that it's really made trends a moving target. Trends were pretty static, for months at a time, and now it's kind of a day-to-day thing. So we have to be really careful about the data that's coming out there through the transom. The big news this week happened through the U.S. Treasury, who announced that any organization getting bailout money will have to curtail their meetings, their incentive meetings, and even their travel. This has put the entire industry into damage control. The response to that has been pretty swift. We have seven key players in the meetings industry coming out with an open letter to the president, explaining, 2.4 million jobs in the business travel industry. Do you really want to, decimate that market as well? New York Times came out with an article earlier this week citing an industry trade group, major, seat at the table, Meeting Professionals International. They've partnered with American Express for their, for their trends on 2009. They're saying 7% of business meetings have been canceled that have already been scheduled for 2009.
Wow.
Attendance is expected to be down 5-10% this year. On the training side, looks equally, a lot of cutbacks. You got a lot of trainers out there hitting the streets that used to be employed full time. You have to really kind of scratch the surface though and really pay attention, Burke, to when this data was gathered. If data was gathered last summer, if it was gathered, even last fall, I'm telling folks that that's almost obsolete.
Sure.
Meeting Professionals International, I've been invited to participate in their business barometer, because they're now taking data every 2 months. The surveys for this month just went out today, and they expect to have new data out by the end of the month.
Well, you know, Vicki, I know that most of the folks that are listening are, and maybe all the folks who are listening, are professional speakers at one level or another. They're certainly all SpeakerMatch.com members, and we refer a lot of our media and marketing pros to become members of SpeakerMatch, and we feel like that's a fantastic extension of their businesses as we work with best-selling authors and entertainers. But, boy, if you're a speaker, as crazy as things are right now, would you advise folks to just, sort of sit it out for a while and maybe give up their speaking and look into consulting or coaching? You know, some of our clients do that right now. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely not, Burke. I think that is the absolutely worst thing that someone can do right now. First off, drill down on the data. Now, I'm going to get riled up, and then I'm going to calm right back down. First off, let's go with the 7% of meetings that have been canceled. That means 93% are still going on. And in the association market, they need speakers. In the corporate market, they still need speakers. The bottom line is you just need to be more competitive. And as a speaker, the worst thing you can be right now is invisible. Because if you are invisible, it is interpreted as weakness. And no one wants to buy weak. No one wants to buy a speaker that looks like they're on their way out. So you have to look at 2009 as a foundational year if you're in a position that you don't have a lot of momentum. Okay? So momentum is the key. If you've got momentum, you got to keep it going. If you don't have momentum, then you need to regroup and repackage your expertise in a way that is more relevant.
Well, I'm relieved to hear you say that because we advise our clients at Allen Media Strategies, and as I told you, we're in Washington, D.C., so we work with lots of folks who are involved in politics and national television as well, CNN and Fox News, and these speakers, we advise them that in a down market economy, this really is the best time to put your best foot forward because so many other folks tend to pull back. And we have reams and reams of marketing research data that show the companies and individuals who really step up their marketing during a down time generally tend to trend up and trend up very quickly. Now, having said that, I talk to a lot of folks who are speaking, and they tell me that the prospecting in their individual regions is more difficult. So what's your take from a national and even global perspective on how prospecting is going out there?
Well, I think prospecting has always had long sales cycles, and the key to prospecting, in my opinion, is market intelligence. If you show the buyer that you're going to have an intelligent conversation with them, then they perk right up because there's so many people that are just reading from a script. In fact, I got to tell you, Burke, I have been producing market intelligence for over 20 years, and I feel so strongly about the use of market intelligence in prospecting and in every phase of the sales cycle that I give it away for free. So I want the listeners to know that if you go to SullivanSpeaker.com/ speakermatch.htm. Not only are you going to get tips, trends, and tirades every week, along with other kinds of updates about what's going on, you know, in Vicki world and also in professional speaking, but you will also get a special report that's nowhere on the website. It's called Speaking of 2009, Top 10 Changes That Shaped the New High-Fee Speech Circuit.
Give me that website one more time. You blew through it a little quick. I want to make sure that all the folks listening today can get that free information.
Sure. It's sullivanspeaker.com, and that's singular speaker.com, /speakermatch.htm.
Got it.
Okay, and we're, I'm more than happy to put the link on y'all's website if that works. But that's what's happening in prospecting right now. The sales cycles have always been long in prospecting. And that's why Speaker Match has such a fabulous service, because what they're doing is they're collapsing that sales cycle by giving their clients buyers who are ready to buy.
Sure.
I mean, that's golden in this industry. And that's golden in this economy. I mean, it's just huge.
Vicki Sullivan is our guest today on SpeakerMatch.com radio. And Vicki, if you are an established speaker and you're one of these folks that talks to a lot of previous users and they were happy with your service before, maybe they had you on the platform last year or the year previous, and I've actually myself experienced this, I know they love me, but they're not bringing me back. How would you recommend from a strategic standpoint to get more business from those past clients?
Well, first off, you have to understand that because of the economy, buyers are changing, okay? The people that used to select speakers before may not anymore, okay? The decision is moving up the food chain. Now, when that happens and a decision is taken away from someone, they usually don't broadcast it, okay? This is not something that you put on your Facebook page. And so they now become the gatekeeper, and they have the power to say no, but they don't have the power to say yes. So what you really have to do is, if you are not branded for the upper echelons, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be in a lot of trouble, because the people that are buying speakers now, they have to know who you are in order to pay you anything above $5,000.
Right.
Okay, and that's where the mental shift occurs is around 5,000. They have to know who you are. Again, it goes back to that visibility, Burke. You have to be visible, and you have to be visible beyond your buyers. And the way to do that is to market by what I call manifesto. And what I mean by marketing by manifesto is that if you market by a point of view or a perspective that is compelling to a wide variety of buyers, not just buyers in one industry, but a wide variety of buyers that applies to a specific industry, then you're going to get the attention of all sorts of buyers, not necessarily just the ones that you've worked with before. And that's going to be what carries your water to the top.
Vicki Sullivan is our guest expert today on Speaker Match Radio, and we just got a note from Paul, who is the guru behind the scenes, along with Rebecca and the rest of the folks there at Speaker Match, and they've already got a link up to your free offer at speakermatch.com radio. Just look for where it says more information, and you can grab Vicki's tips there, and her website, of course, again, is sullivanspeaker.com. Vicki, what about the buyer's perception of these speakers? Do you find that because of the economy, their opinion has changed about us, especially in terms of, you know, sort of how much they can grind us on rate?
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, one of the biggest trends out there now is perception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one wants to be seen as, you know, partying like it's 1999 when we're going through this horrible, horrible economy. So big fee speakers are suffering a little bit of a backlash. The more prominent speakers are now having to dance on the head of a pin. You can be big, but not too big. And the issue, particularly in the association market, is that big name speakers are no longer seen as what will generate the attendance. And that was a major driver during the boom times. Is we're going to get this big speaker, and they're going to create a lot of excitement for the event, and we're going to drive attendance. Now what's driving the attendance, because we now have the new frugality, is content, perspective, point of view. It's all about education now. And this is a huge, huge opportunity for Speaker Match clients, because most of the Speaker Match clients are not as prominent as the major celebrities.
So then, Vicki, as you get into that, and you move away from, you know, the huge national names, the Colin Powells, for example, or the former presidents or the celebrities, when buyers are looking for, what do they look for in terms of content when they select the speakers? And you know, with the criteria changing in the economy, could you give me two or three changes that the buyers are really looking for now in their speakers?
Sure. First off, they want more access. Okay, I'm going to use the association market as a great example because a lot of those folks are doing this. They are now trying to extend the value of that registration dollar that they bring in by saying not only are you going to go to the event, but you're going to be part of a community that's going to interact before the event and after the event. So speakers need to have more access, that, you know, you need to do more stuff for associations. This is now a relationship. You're not just suiting up and showing up. All right. So what can you do on a web-based basis with that association? How can you partner with them before? How can you partner with them after? That's really huge. More educational content, okay? More educational content. Meetings have a very strategic purpose now. No one's doing meetings just because they did them, you know, in the past two or three years. There's got to be a very specific message that they need to get to people. And they use the speaker as the messenger, as the conduit to demonstrate that message, to demonstrate that point. So how your content fits their strategic goals. That's why, again, marketing by manifesto is the key for this economy, because what you set up is you say, here's what I represent, and if you, and it is relevant to you in this way. That is what's really the hugest, hugest change. And also, the third biggest change, generational appeal. Can you mix and mingle with all sorts of folks? I mean, does your content, does your perspective appeal to a wide, broad base of people regarding, you know, regardless of their age, regardless of their perspective? You know, a lot of associations are going after Generation Y and to give them a voice. So look for a lot of facilitated approaches there so that these generations can come together.
So generational appeal. To a broad audience, a very educational focused content and accessibility. And part of what we do, Vicki, is we, you know, encourage our authors, for example, to do these national media hits so that they can expose their work to, you know, a broad audience out there. And I would assume that that sort of accessibility in certain speaking situations is also important to buyers. If you can say, gosh, I've been on CNN or I've been on the Fox News Channel or I was covered in the New York Times and I will do those interviews for you, that will probably play into that accessibility and make you that much more marketable.
Well, again, it goes back to being recognizable to folks higher on the food chain. You know, when you, you know, those buyers higher than the food chain, you know, high up there, they recognize CNN, they recognize the New York Times. And so if you've been in those formats, you know, it increases your value to them.
Vicki Sullivan from Sullivan Speaker, nationally recognized as the top market strategist for experts on the professional speaking circuit. We've got some email questions coming in to speakermatch.com/radio. If you'd like to get yours in, please do so now, and we'll answer as many of those as we can. So, Vicki, with the new economic reality, if you will, give me some brands, you know, that are hot right now. What's getting market traction out there? Where should, you know, I've always been taught to fish where the fish are, so where should we be fishing as speakers?
Well, the top three brands right now are manifesto, what I call the manifesto based brands, community based brands, and cool people, cool project brands. Okay, so let me just drill down a little bit on those. The manifesto based brands are those that a lot like Jim Collins from Good to Great. Okay, when you hear from Good to Great, you think of Jim Collins. He is kind of the leader of the movement in that way. He has redefined what it meant at that time to be from good to great. And so that brand is really, really hot in this economy because, again, it is relevant. So, again, having a manifesto. Having a manifesto is crucial, crucial, crucial. This is the number one thing that I help my clients with, is having a manifesto that resonates with the marketplace so that when you have those media interviews, you're coming across as someone who has a very specific type of perspective that can be applied in a wide variety of ways. Community-based brands. When you are a representative of a community, especially in the association market, the attendance is everything, especially in this economy when attendance is down. People are fighting for every single participant. And so if you can have a pool with a community, if you have a community that will follow you, that is very, very important in this economy. So that's why I think that's why blogging is so important, is because people are building communities. Cool person, cool projects brand. This is an outgrowth of what I've talked about for years called the anti-speaker movement. And basically what buyers are saying is that we don't want a talking head. We want someone that's out there doing cool stuff, has a perspective because they're doing cool stuff, and we want to bring them in and share that perspective with us. So what else are you doing besides speaking is really huge right now, because folks want to know the perspective from the front lines.
Let me ask you some questions specifically about those three hot brands. A manifesto, how is that different, or how is it similar to having your own corner of the market and having your own brand, so to speak?
Well, when you own a corner of the market, usually you own like a demographic or an industry, you know, you own that space. Like, for example, you can own a sales space, all right?
Right.
But the sales space that's a pretty big playground. There's a lot of folks that can play on that playground. That's an ocean, so to speak, versus a river. And so you can own your manifesto, you can own the corner of complex selling, okay, or selling intangibles. You know, there's a variety of perspectives that you can have, but when you redefine those issues, like if you can redefine selling intangibles, then that is a manifesto-driven brand. And what you got to do, and it goes back to market intelligence, you got to look at what's being said in that space. And you need to find the hole in the market that says, what are people really not discussing but is relevant? You know, what's the white elephant in the room? And you create a manifesto around that. In fact, I even created a system to creating manifestos. It's called Your Position of Power. And information about that is on the link as well. But manifestos, because we're circling back now because of the economy and really focusing on education and really focusing on content, those manifestos are going to be front and center.
Got it. And so it sounds like it's a lot of very similar to how we coach our media personalities, becoming unique and compelling in a particular mind space. Got it.
Absolutely. And with media, you've got to do that in the form of sound bites. In speaking, you can do that through rhetorical questions.
Sure, and your entire persona.
Yeah.
Now, the community-based, let me ask you if this is a good example of what you're talking about. One of our clients, Vicki, does an awful lot of speaking in the paranormal realm. He's an author, and there was a Discovery Channel TV show about him. And the first time I went out to see him speak, it was at a University of Maryland, and I found it very interesting when I got there that there were the 60 or 70 students in this lecture hall, but there were a couple of dozen folks that were followers of sort of that whole paranormal experience world, and this speaker had, of course, been in touch with him through his website and through active blogging, and there is a community of those people, so it was an additional draw for him. Is that what you mean by community-based?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this whole community thing really came to life for me personally when I was giving a speech in New York City. And I was in the heart of Times Square. And I had given my speech, and I was eating lunch at a world-famous deli. And, you know, I take pictures everywhere. So I was taking pictures, and a lady walked up to me and said, "Would you like for me to take your picture next to this landmark?" And I said, "Oh, I'd love it." And I said, "Thank you very much." And I thought she was a stranger. And as it turned out, she wasn't. She goes, "You know, I have been a fan of your work from afar. I've known you for about 4 years, and I've followed you to all these different cities." And I'm like, wow. You know, I mean, I didn't even recognize her on the street, you know, but
sure.
She was telling me these because she was a part of the community, and so that generates attendance.
That's huge. Vicki Sullivan is our guest today on SpeakerMatch.com radio, and we're talking about how to bob and weave in this difficult economy to continue to remain very relevant. And when we talk about branding and manifestos, you know, there are a ton of choices out there, and we always coach our folks, and it sounds like you do too, into that unique, compelling mind space. But if you're really struggling on how to choose the best brand, what direction would you give someone, you know, with the knowledge of the economy where it is right now?
You know, that's an excellent question because, you know, regardless of what's going on in the economy and in the marketplace, if you do not approach the market from a position of strength, I don't care what's going on in the economy, you're going to fail. I mean, that's just bottom line. The market responds to strength, no matter how strong or how weak the economy is. And therefore, a lot of folks, as talented as we are, we have a variety of choices. So when it comes to branding, it's like, which is the best choice? It's not what choice can you do, because a variety of people can do a variety of things. It's what's the best choice, what's the most profitable choice. And this is when benchmarks really become your friend. So there's three key questions that I always ask of my clients. The first question is, does this choice, does this brand apply your strengths to your most profitable audience? Okay? Now, this is huge, Burke. It is not the description of who you are, it is, or your strengths or your gifts. It is the application of your gift and your strengths and your talents that really matter. So it's how do you apply your strengths? What problem do you solve? Does your brand choice create a variety of opportunities so you just don't look like a talking head? Again, nobody wants talking heads up there. They want cool people doing cool stuff and talking about it. And then most importantly, does this brand choice, does this choice that you're making compel your target market to choose you over your colleagues? Though, if you can answer those three questions, then you have created the right brand for you.
Wow. So you're really going to have to think about that. And how can you apply your strength to your most profitable audience? And I will tell you, Vicki, that advice is spot on. For many years, I was a broadcaster, full-time radio personality, program director, radio station owner, and that's my background and my passion. It was not necessarily the most profitable audience that could use that knowledge and expertise. So you're spot on, absolutely. Now let's talk about the other end of the coin. Let's say that some of our listeners today have a brand that was popular in the 90s, you know, the go-go 80s, or even earlier this decade, but what they were talking about, their brand is no longer in favor. You know, it's gone out of favor with the times. What would you recommend, and what do you recommend to your clients on how to change up that brand to sort of fit this new market reality we all live in when you're already pretty firmly entrenched in that world? How do you change it up?
It's tricky. You know, it's pretty tricky because once a market has a perception of you, those boxes are built to last. I mean,
sure.
That's why I like to work with what I call the blank slate clients. Now, these are the folks who are good at what they do, okay, and they've got some traction, but the open market doesn't have a strong opinion one way or the other. So sometimes if you're not a blank slate, you need to do two things. One, for the folks that already know you, you always offer options. Because if you're in a very strong strategic box that's hard to get out of, you don't want to kill your momentum. So So there's going to be folks that love you, that want you to do that silly topic that nobody else wants. Go ahead and do it. This is what I call cash all checks. You know, if it's not illegal or immoral, it's not unethical because you've done it before, and they know you can do it. You're not promising something that you can't do. Go ahead and cash that check. Offer options. The worst thing that you want to do is climb out of the box and be there freezing by yourself. Okay, that's not good. Okay. Second, from a branding perspective, you have to create a bridge between what you've done and what you're doing now. And there's several ways to do that. One is what I call the Eureka story. I presented this story model to the Harvard student body a few years back. What the Eureka story is, you know, you were doing this in the 90s and you're having a blast, and then all of a sudden, boom, you discovered blah, blah, blah. And this was such a powerful discovery. This is now your new adventure. You know, and so as long as it's related, like if you're a leadership speaker, and this is, I feel really sorry for a lot of the leadership speakers because they're being branded as flavor of the month.
Right.
And in a way, it's kind of their own fault because they didn't differentiate enough, but that's a whole different interview. At any rate, so let's say they're a leadership speaker, they've fallen out of favor because they're seen as flavor of the month. What you do with those kind of folks is you say, okay, what you play on your past success, but you create a bridge for the Eureka. And you say, what you've learned is blah, 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 that's redefining, you know, something related, and you go from there. So the issue is you don't play Madonna. I mean, reinventions are great for Madonnas, and it's not good for us mere mortals. You don't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to speak about basket weaving, okay? You create that bridge between what you and what you do now. And so that you make it an evolution and not a reinvention.
Makes perfect sense. Vicki Sullivan is our guest on SpeakerMatch.com radio. Brian Kaplowitz has the week off. I'm Burke Allen from Allen Media Strategies in Washington, D.C., asking your questions. And are you ready to answer some email questions, Vicki?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks to Helen from Miami for listening today. She wants to know if it's a good idea to drop her prices because of the economy, or will it only show defeat?
Oh, that's a fabulous question. Thanks so much. I think it depends on the situation. If you have a client that you've worked with for years and you want to show loyalty to that client by reducing your fee, I think that's fine. I think that you need to know that once you reduce your fee in this economy, it's going to be very hard to increase it later on. So this is a very strategic question. It's a request. It's a question that requires a lot of thought. Don't do it lightly. I think it depends on the situation. A lot of times you can give more and keep the same price. Sometimes what I tell clients is when someone asks them to reduce their fee for whatever the reason, whether it's the economy or whatever, you always want to come back with, I'm happy to do that. What could I receive in return? And I'll tell you, if somebody wants you and you come at it from a position of, hey, we're on the same team here. We both, you know, you want me, I want you. Let's not make money the biggest obstacle. Let's look at some other things that we can work out. You would be surprised of the promotional stuff that you can get, you know, that would be worth more than the portion of the fee that you're giving up. You know, if someone arranges a special reception or a special lunch with major decision makers in that industry, is that worth giving up 25% of your fee? You betcha. You know, so, but the standard, the benchmark, because again, I'm a huge fan of benchmarks, is that if someone else comes to you and say, I want the same fee that you gave buyer number one over here, you say, that's fine. Here's what buyer number one did for me. Are you willing to do the same thing?
So in today's economy, be creative. All right, perfect. That makes sense to me. And Ray is listening, and his email question, he says, first of all, Vicki, thank you for the very relevant info. He wants to know about ethics. That's his subject matter, and how that can be branded such that Ray can take advantage of the tough economy. Ooh, that's a tough one.
Okay, so he's an ethical speaker? I mean, he will. Okay. Well, here's the thing about ethics. The problem with ethics is that sorry, Ray, it's been the ethical speakers. They've been doing what I call preaching and teaching, you know, and no one likes to have someone's finger wagged in their face. And there's been too many of those that have talked about that. I think that ethics is a relevant topic, but it needs to be positioned it needs to be redefined. Okay, again, because there's been too much teaching and preaching. It's got to be redefined in a way that's relevant. I think that there's a variety of ways that you can do that, but you just got to make sure you're not wagging your finger in everybody's face, because that's the last thing an audience wants right now.
All right, very good. And Vicki has been kind enough to post some free suggestions up on our website, speakermatch.com/radio. There's a link there that says more information, and she has loaded us down with good stuff. Hey, back to Helen's question about dropping prices. I've worked with, down through the years, quite a few speakers who have worked at reduced fees, and in some cases, non-fee speakers who have instead been able to do back-of-room sales, and might that be a good negotiating tactic in this economy?
Oh, absolutely. I know some very prominent folks who make, you know, seven figures, and they make that by, you know, so-called free speaking. Here's the key to what I call promotional speaking. You want to make sure that the people in the room can hire you. And not only are they able to hire you, but are they willing to hire you? There's a real distinction here. Just because someone has money does not mean they're going to give it to you. So you've got to make sure they're willing as well as able to invest in whatever you're giving them. And so, absolutely, in this economy, the thing you got to be careful of is that, especially in the association market will tell all their speakers, oh, you want exposure to our group. We're a very prominent audience, blah, 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 blah. And they all think that, you know, and the key question is, are they a prominent audience for you? Okay, so you need to make sure that you've got really strong benchmarks there about the audience, about who buys you, who doesn't buy you, who likes you versus who buys you. Okay, that's a big difference. Okay, someone can love you dearly but never spend a dime with you.
Sure.
Okay, that you don't want those. Okay, you also want to look at speaking as a branding tool. There are some speeches that you need to do just because, and I'm going to use the media-based events. You know, Inc. magazine back in the day would ship 110,000 brochures in order to get 1,000 people to their conference. Does your face, does your picture need to be on those 110,000 brochures? Yes, it does. You know,
absolutely.
That's okay. You know, that's a worthwhile thing. So again, you got to look at speaking as a branding tool. If you are a paid professional speaker, I tell folks 10% of your calendar needs to be for branding purposes. You know, you need to have a seen and be seen type of strategy out there, again, because it increases your profile. For the expert speaking or the promotional speaking, you want to make sure that you have very strong benchmarks, because there is a lot of time and energy that goes into speaking, and now more than ever, you need leads coming out of that speech.
Absolutely.
You can't just have applause.
Qualified attendees, and ascertaining whether they're qualified is key in this
economy. Absolutely. And what associations are doing now, by the way, Burke, is they're asking that speakers don't sell at the back of the room, because, you know, if every speaker did that, it would be very, you know, it would be very disruptive toward the flow of the event. What they're doing instead is they're setting up stores, like bookstores and, you know, retail shops on the convention floor, and so that all the speakers there can have their goods in one place.
Now, I would assume that you as a speaker would make an awful lot less on your back of room product were that to be the case, so you need to factor that into your negotiation.
Absolutely, because buyers have more choices. You're always giving a commission to the organization. And so, but yeah, but a lot, what's happening in the association market, and this has happened for years and years and years, and it's even going to get worse now because of the economy, is you really can't pitch from the podium. If it even looks like you're pitching from the podium, you know, guns start blazing, you know, bombs are thrown. It's just a bad, bad scene. You know, it's just really bad.
Almost two separate camps there, then, your fee versus your non-fee speakers. You need to be absolutely crystal clear going in as to what your agreement and arrangement is.
Oh, yeah, and what they'll say to you, what the association folks will say is, well, it's an honor to speak in front of our group. This is an educational event. People have paid money to be here. If you promote your service in any way, shape, or form, we will blackball you. I mean, it just gets that, and it will be in the contract. They won't use the word blackball, but they'll use other more subtle threats. But the bottom line is they'll blackball you. And because of the internet, let me tell you something. A speaker can get disrespected, and it can go around the world three times.
Absolutely, in no time.
In no time. So it is really in your best interest to play ball with these people, because if someone asks about you on some of these message boards, these buyers don't hold back. I mean, you could do a great job, and they'll say, hey, great content, but a major diva, not worth the trouble.
Vicki Sullivan is our guest today. She is a member of the Women's Leadership Board for the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, where she focuses on mentoring future world leaders, which is pretty impressive. And if you've got a question and you want to probe Vicki's brain, we're going to open up the lines in just a second. So be jotting your question down, and we'll try to squeeze as many of these in as we can. Another email question. This is from Nina, who's listening in St. Paul, and she wants to know if you'll impart some advice to her for somebody who's just starting out, isn't on the circuit yet, wants to get out there now, and Nina says she'll speak for free, too, just to get more experience and exposure. But advice for a starting speaker in this tough economy.
Don't assume that free speaking will get you paid speaking. Okay, there is I think free speaking is a great laboratory with certain groups. I mean, you need to practice, you need to hone your craft. But I think the biggest misconception out there with the newbies is, and it's a very traditional model that is obsolete, is if you're a good speaker, that's enough. The speaking business has grown up. It's a real business now. You need to be very, very strategic as far as your branding. You need to be very, very strategic as far as your business model, as far as your strategic direction, because you're going to put in some time, energy, and money in whatever direction you go, and it is not the time to be happenstance with those. So get strategic or just set this out.
All right, very good, and don't give it away for free. It's okay to get your sea legs by doing the free stuff, and then after you do that, unless there's a strategic reason for you to be there, then you don't want to undervalue yourself.
Well, yeah, because what happens a lot is if you're seen as a free speaker, then no one wants to pay you because they look like a fool for paying you when everyone else got you for free.
Perfect. All right, very good. Here's a gentleman in West Mansfield, Ohio. I know that town. Charles Carpenter is a Speaker Match member and wants to know, in your opinion, the top three things that he should make available on his event planner resources page on Speaker Match that would impress a planner. So a planner surfing around, they're trying to figure out who to go after. What should Charles or any of our listeners put up there? What are the top three things they should make available on that planner resources page?
Well, the first thing to get rid of are those silly little 10 reasons to hire me stuff. I mean, please, I'm begging you, if there's anything that you hear today, hear this, get that crap off your website. That's just silly. That is old, silly, silly things. So get that off there. So that would be one, the biggest change to make. The second change is show your relevancy. It goes back to your manifesto, you know. If you have a process that makes your content more relevant, say, you know, we go beyond, I'm making this up, we go beyond the questionnaire and we interview the top 10 opinion leaders in your industry, and we will bring out those findings. Something like that that shows a process, you know, every speech has this going into it. Okay, so you can make it relevant. So that's second. One thing, get off the silly stuff. Two, make it relevant. Three, show how, don't tell people you're easy to work with. Show them. So here's, you know, we know that you're, you know, here's our 5-point plan to make sure that we work seamlessly with your team, you know, that kind of thing. So because no one wants a diva in this economy. I don't care how good you are. If you're trouble, you're out. So show that you're easy to work with. Show that you're relevant. Buyers want to be the hero. They want people coming up to them after the speech saying, home run. You hit a home run bringing this guy in. Good job. Rock on. If they're not the president, they want the president coming to them saying, you know what, that speaker rocked. Good job. Good job.
And what
that's what they're looking for.
Credentialing, if you have spoken in front of XYZ associations or if you've done a national radio media campaign and folks may have heard of you, credentialing, do you think that will tip you over your colleagues?
It could, but you got to be careful because people assume that just because you're credentialed doesn't mean that your message fits.
Okay.
So it shows that you know what you're talking about, which is a very close second. I mean, once they hear your message, they want to know, well, who are you again? And they want to make sure that the power of the media is really third-party endorsement. The buyers assume that if you've been in the media that you've been vetted and that you're safer to hire because, after all, CNN doesn't let just anyone talk to them. You know,
gotcha.
New York Times just doesn't interview anybody. That's kind of the thinking behind it. So if you say, hire me because I'm prominent, that cut it about 2 or 3 years ago. What's cutting it now is hire me because I'm relevant and I won't embarrass you. Look at my credentials.
We're going to take some calls now. If you'd like to ask Vicki Sullivan a question, all you need to do is dial 1-1. Dial 1-1 now, and Paul at the switchboard will let some folks in to ask questions. And one more thing on the pages to make available on the Event Planner Resources area at Speaker Match, demo videos, good or bad?
Well, demo videos are a double-edged sword, okay? If you're going to do a demo video, it needs to be your stellar, stellar footage, okay? Too many people do demo videos too soon, and they spend thousands and thousands of dollars on footage that's just not that good. And, you know, this is not the time to make, you know, lemonade out of lemons. You know, if you've got bad footage, don't try to dress it up and put it up there. Go out and get better footage. The second thing about demo videos is that buyers will judge your message by the content on that footage. Now, I have a lot of speakers come to me and say, well, I want to show that I can tell a good story. Yeah, but if your story makes a stupid point, you just put yourself out of the market. So it has to be, again, riveting, compelling. The purpose of the demo video is not only to show your speaking style, it is also to show your content. You cannot tell a buyer, ignore my content, just look at the demo video for style, and here's my written outline about what I'm going to create for you. That doesn't cut it.
And it certainly makes sense to me, coming from the media world, that you want to make sure that audio and video is sharp and crystal clear. Content needs to be top-notch, and they've also got to be able to see you and hear you well.
Oh, absolutely. And what's really interesting is if the content is riveting, you know, if you're really giving, you know, if it's really, really good footage, I've had shadows on speakers' faces where, like, the lighting was off or something. Buyers didn't care. They don't, you know, if what you're doing is compelling enough, it will forgive some of the technical glitches.
So the content, as they say, is king. All right, very good. Okay, let's open up the phones now for Vicki Sullivan. If you've got a question for the top market strategist for experts on the professional speaking circuit, now is your opportunity. Oh, and we do have a caller on the line. Thank you, Paul. Hi. What's your question for Vicki? Hello, caller. Are you there?
Hello?
Hi.
It's you. This is Charles Carpenter from West Mansfield, Ohio. And I actually had another question, but specifically in regards to video. What I have on my website are very short clips, One is a single point that the audience responds with some laughter, and I put it there because of that response. The quality is actually poor, but the audience response was great, and the content's something that's very original to me. The other clip was a little bit longer, but again, it's very original content to myself, and I felt that I had a lot of audience participation in that. I was actually a little reluctant to put it up because of the low quality of the video.
What's your question?
At what point is the quality of our production or whatever media we're making available compromised our perceived credibility?
Again, just what I said, if the content is original, if it looks very real and authentic, buyers will forgive a lot of sins. If the format, if the speech looks like a small group and the buyer is considering you for a big keynote presentation, that's going to operate against you. If authentic, real, thank you, YouTube, okay? Thanks to that little organization, authentic rules. And so you can get away with more than you could in the past. I haven't seen the clip, so I can't respond directly to that, but I can tell you that buyers are more forgiving than they've been in the past. However, that being said, it depends on the slot that you're going up for. If you're a big keynote speaker, more than $5,000, you need to have a big event footage.
Right. Well, my other question was, in regards to brand, I spent years in the construction industry, and kind of just got stuck with the brand, the builder. And I use my middle name, Bill. So I'm Bill the Builder. My kids think that's cute, but I'm always a little concerned. We just recently invested a great deal in photo shoots, the whole hard hat, everything. My photos really stand out. No one forgets me. I go to events all the time and someone will come up, you're the Builder, you Twitter, or they've seen my picture, and so I'm memorable. Again, I'm concerned about some of my target audience being a more corporate audience, teaching high-level management. Does that in any way compromise the professionalism?
Well, I haven't seen it, so I can't respond directly. What I will tell you is that gimmicks don't fly in the boardroom. Okay.
Yeah.
Gimmicks are great on the platform. They're great. You know, the fact that you're being remembered is great, but I think that you're asking a very valid question, which is, what are you being remembered for? And the more gimmicky you are, the less likely you're going to be taken seriously at the higher levels. They just respond, different people respond to different things. And gimmicks smack of that flavor of the month that people, and what the higher echelon people will say is, you know, he's a good speaker for middle management. Put him in the corporate university circuit. Well, if you go corporate university, that pays like two bags of beans a week. So that's not sustainable. I mean, you know, for most folks. If you're a community college, that works. But you see what I'm saying?
Yep, that makes perfect sense to me. And thank you, Charles, for listening, and thanks for your question. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on live with Vicki Sullivan. Hello. Hello, caller, are you there?
Hello. Hello, Vicki?
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to know what I should do in terms of connecting my book to my brand. Are there topics out there that are really hot now?
You know, that is an excellent question. The time to brand your book is before you write it. And so you're kind of if your book is not branded well, you're in a position of weakness and you have to work around it. Now, I'm not going to make that assumption about you because I haven't seen your book, but I can tell you that a good 75% of the people who call me that have already written books are operating from a position of weakness because they didn't brand the book to their most profitable audience and their most profitable market. They trust publishers, and the publisher's job is to sell books, not sell speaking engagements. not sell consulting, not build a business model. They're just interested in selling books. And so let's go to the dark side and let's pretend that your book does not brand you. If that's the case, you have to move around it. And the way that you do that is you do what I call talking past the book. And what you use the book as a bridge, and you say, yes, I'm the author of this. Here's the number one lesson I learned while writing this book. Or here's what I learned when doing research for this book, and segue into a topic that better brands you.
That's a great question. And you know, Vicki, we work with a ton of authors, too. And one of the interesting strategies that we've come across in terms of generating that free national media exposure, I'm sure it works very much the same way in the speaking industry, is to really analyze what that book is about. And sometimes there are 6, 7, 10 subcategories in there that you can mix and mangle and pull out of there, so that the actual overall topic of the book can sometimes be secondary to your speaking engagement or your media hit. As long as there's some connecting string, then sometimes that can be just enough of a foot in the door to help you land that gig. And let's face it, being a published author, even if you're self-published, is a nice credibility builder.
Well, it's really interesting because, you know, with 110,000 titles that come out every year, you know, books have always been used as a calling card. I see books as a tool, and the effectiveness depends on how you use it. And if you've got a strong business model, if you have a strong strategic direction, those are your North Stars. That's the star and the moon, so to speak. And the book is then used as a tool or as a conduit to get that manifesto out there, that point of view out there. I think sometimes people write books without looking at the strategy first.
Vicki Sullivan has been our guest today on Speaker Match Radio. And, Vicki, before we wrap up, what is the one nugget you'd like to leave our listeners with? If there's one thing that you could tell them, one piece of advice, and then I want to make sure that we get all your contact information out there. But given where we are in the economy today, the one piece of advice you would give the folks who are listening.
The biggest piece of advice that I can give people right now in this economy is that content has become king. And that if you are not compelling in your content, if you are not relevant in your content, you will be pushed aside. And that's just the bottom line. Get your manifesto in order. Make sure your manifesto is compelling. Look at what you can redefine. What value are you adding to the conversation? And that's going to be a major driver to your speaking success in 2009 and, frankly, in 2010 as well.
Now, if you'd like to find out more, and Vicki has been gracious enough to give us tons of free content, go to speakermatch.com/radio, and the more information button you can click on there. Vicki, also, your website again is sullivanspeaker.com, is that correct?
Absolutely. And if you want to go to the specific page where you can sign up for tips, trends, and tirades, that's a newsletter that comes out every 2 weeks. You're also going to be signing up for updates, you know, things that are coming up that you might want to know about. If you go to sullivanspeaker.com/speakermatch.htm, you can also download, when you sign up for tips and trends and tirades, you can also download that special report that's not on the site anywhere else. This is specifically for Speaker Match listeners. This is specifically for folks that are listening on this radio show. You go to that page and you'll get a special report that's nowhere else on the site.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for doing that, and thanks for being on the call today. We certainly appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Vicki Sullivan has been our guest. I'm Burke Allen from Allen Media Strategies in Washington, D.C. For Brian Kaplowitz and the whole Speaker Match gang, Paul and Rebecca, thanks for listening today.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the Speaker Match radio series, Success Strategies for Speakers from the Pros. Speaker Match is the leading provider of tools and services for emerging professional speakers. You can find more information about Speaker Match at www.speakermatch.com. Our toll-free number, if you prefer to reach us by phone, is 1-866-372-8768. International callers can reach us at area code 512-372-8768. Thank you again for listening, and we wish you the best in your speaking career.